This is Nick Treadwell, and you are listening to Nick Treadwell's Storyville.
September, the first day of school, by Howard Nemirov. My child and I hold hands on the way to school, and when I leave him at the first grade door, he cries a little, but he's brave. He does let go. My selfish tears remind me how I cried before that door a life ago. I may have had a hard time letting go. Each fall, the children must endure together what every child also endures alone. Learning the alphabet, the integers, 3 dozen bits and pieces of a stuff so arbitrary, so peremptory, that worlds invisible and visible bow down before it. As in Joseph's dream, the sheaves bowed down and then the stars bowed down before the dreaming of a little boy. That dream got him such hatred of his brothers as cost the greater part of life to mend, and yet great kindness came of it in the end. A school is where they grind the grain of thought, and grind the children who must mind the thought. It may be those two grindings are but one, as from the alphabet come Shakespeare's plays, as from the integers come Ilula's law, as from the whole, inseparably, the lives, the shrunken lives that have not been set free by law or poetic fantasy. But may they be. My child has disappeared behind the schoolroom door, and should I live to see his coming forth a lifetime away, I know my hope, but do not know its form, nor hope to know it. May the fathers he finds among the teachers have a care of him more than his father could. How that will look, I do not know. I do not need to know. Even our tears belong to ritual, but may great kindness come of it in the end. So this is a poem by Howard Nemirov, who is an American poet. And the subject of the poem, obviously, is the first day of school. The poem is broken down into two bits. The first part is about the parent taking the child to school for the first time. And then the second part is what happens after that when the child enters the classroom and beyond. And in a way, I suppose it's a poem about letting go and having faith in a system, in an institution. So let's take a look at the poem in a bit more detail. And the first stanza, my child and I hold hands on the way to school. The first line here sets up the bond between child and parent. It's a connection that up to this point has not been threatened in their lives because the child has not known anything substantially away from the home life. And this is now going to be threatened or breached in a way. Everywhere the child has gone, the parent has been there to watch over, to protect, and importantly, to instill their own morals, ethics, and empathy. The parental link is about to be cut as the child enters the institution of education. Life for both the parent and the child will not be the same again as it is for every child and every parent. It's a borderline moment in their lives. and we've all been through it, so we can all relate to it. The child cries, but he's brave, the poem says. He does let go. And here, if you take a look at the printed version of the poem, you'll see that he does let go is broken into two lines. So he does is at the end of one line, and then let go is the start of the next line. So signifying there that breakage, that letting go, that separation between the parent and the child. There is inevitability about this line, that even if the child were to object in the strongest way, that the outcome would still be the same. Perhaps the child has been pre-warned for some time that the school is going to be inevitable, that it's the best thing for them, that it's just one of those things that just has to happen because that's the way of things. Of course, at this infant age, when the child starts school, they won't appreciate perhaps the enormity of the change that's about to happen. And this can be both a positive aspect, the learning, the language, the mathematics, the subjects, the opening up to a world that they were never really open to before, which will lead to greater things, to friendships, but also essentially they are leaving behind the care of the parent and the warm, cosy environment of the home. Not forever, of course, and only temporarily. But it is a change in the habit. So all the parent can really do is encourage them to swallow their fears and doubts and be brave. And I remember that my own first day of school, of course, was not a very nice thing. In fact, it was a lot more negative than the person in this poem is making out. What I remember of my first day of school is that, yes, I was holding my mum's hand as I went to school. And then back in those days in school, you were whereas now it's probably a much lesser shock, because now they tend to do it in a stepped way, in a way which is not so shocking. So it's you're sort of introduced to school in a stepped way. So but back in those days it was more of a, you know, that's it, you're going to go to school, you're taken to school, and your parent just leaves you there, and that's the end of that. And for me, that was probably a step too far, and I did cry, and I did kick, and I did punch, and I did scream. And I remember that traumatic event, and it was a traumatic event. It was a very traumatic event. And that separation, that change in environment was a shock, was a great shock, and probably something that, you know, it took me a long time to get over. I may never have got over it. In fact, probably throughout my school life, that shockwave of trauma and probably many other traumas from school carried with me down until eventually I escaped. As in most experiences that a child goes through, the parent often remembers their first experience as well. It's part of what I always refer to as the generational through line, where you're able to draw an imaginary line through from your own experiences and memories of those in the future or those in the past, to future generations or in past generations. Here, the father is not so upset at leaving his child, but more that his child's experience is reminding him of his own first day, which he mentions may have been a bit more traumatic, maybe not as traumatic as my own experience, but at least more traumatic than his own child. And we move on to the next the next stanza. Each for the child must endure together what every child endures alone. The child will endure both together and alone what every child goes through. The journey through learning that will lead to an adult life, although it's loosely the same experience for all children, including subjects and classrooms and reading and writing and homework eventually, it will also be specifically different for each of them as well. Also, some aspects of learning can be done both together in a group environment and also alone, as in the homework, or perhaps, you know, drawing something or doing some sums or maths or whatever. So there's two different aspects. Also, perhaps this particular line is alluding to the internal thoughts of the child when learning, the excitement, the happiness, or fear that there will be, that they'll do something wrong. You know, that you know, if they do something wrong, what will happen? Will they be punished? And it's something that stays with the child after the learning as well. That thought, that feeling that, you know, they've been introduced to something, a new aspect of life, and they've learned something about the world which they didn't know before. And that tends to stay with a person or a child. Perhaps not in the same way as it does with an adult, but it is there, and there are thoughts that stay with them, and that line could allude to that aspect of both enduring it together and also on a solo basis. After these first two lines of the second stanza, we get a kind of example from the poet of what he means here, and he gives us, you know, learning the alphabet, learning maths and integers, and three dozen bits and pieces of other stuff that are so arbitrary, so peremptory, that worlds invisible and visible start to open or bow down. And this, I remember that in the times when I was learning to read myself, that there was this, I don't know if it's the same now, but we used to have this thing where, you know, it was reading time, and then each child would like read to themselves, and also be called up to be to read in front of the teacher. And this was extreme. This was particularly nervous for some, particularly a fear thing for some children who are quite shy like me. Going up to the teacher, having to read to them, having to actually open your mouth and say things to the teacher, and try and pronounce words that you'd never come across before, was interesting. And trying to make any mistakes. And there was also the group reading, where you would read together in a group way. The teacher would read to you, and then the children would take it in turns to read a paragraph of the particular story and stuff like that. And this three dozen bits of other stuff as well that the poet is alluding to, and that there are other random things that a child learns along the way. And this may be different for each child, depending on what level of learning they may be at. And that these learnings are, for the most part, set in stone and really not open to any interpretation at that point, because, you know, a child can't really, at that age, they're not really, you know, dissecting things and taking things apart. It's more of a, I'm going to tell you how it is, and that's how it is kind of thing. You know, A is always A, always pronounced A, and one is always on its own. So they're just given things that, you know, the child just takes in. The next part of the poem follows on from that last line, that worlds invisible and visible, going on to the next stanza, bow down before it, as in Joseph's dream. The sheaves bowed down, and then the stars bowed down. Now, this world's invisible and visible, I thought about this for a long time. I was trying to get a handle on what the hell this means, and I don't really know the Bible that well. So I looked up Joseph's dream, and he has two dreams when he's a young man, and these dreams. In these dreams, one of them in the stars, the moon, all bow down to him in a dream, and the number of stars equals the number of brothers that he's got. He's got about 11 or 12 brothers, Joseph. And in another dream, his brothers and he are out in a field collecting grain, and his brothers' sheaths of grain in the dream bow down to Joseph's, and his brothers take offence at this. They're kind of like miffed at this. Like, well, you know, what does this mean? We're going to have to bow down to you, Joseph, our own brother. They're not really happy about this at all. And so, transposing that into this poem, what does that mean? What does the world bow down before it? Now, the it in this, I think, is probably these bits and pieces of stuff that the child picks up along the way, the bits and pieces of education, the bits of learning. And it's hard to know exactly what this means. And it might be different for each person that reads it. But for me, what I take from it is that we start off learning the basics of any subject, not really knowing where things might lead, in which direction that it might go. So we need to have a certain trust in our own ability. And others need to also trust that we will eventually be further on in our journey of learning. As an example, the poem uses the example of a story of Joseph, which I've just related. And this, this bowing down and this in these poems. And I said these brothers take offence at this, because they think that it implies that they are somehow inferior to their brother. This animosity between Joseph and his brothers continues, and is only resolved many years later in Joseph's life, when Joseph shows a kindness to his brothers and gives them something back. So in the bowing down and just the giving of yourself in a kind of sacrificial way to the discipline of learning to read or history or whatever subject it may be, we are placing a kind of unspoken trust and confidence that where we take those skills that we gain from the learning is really up to us. It's up to us what we do with it. We can do something good with it, or we can do something bad with it. You know, if we have good in our hearts, then the knowledge will be used for good, and otherwise it will manifest in a different way. And the poem states, this is what, at great cost, at cost the greater part of a life to mend, and yet great kindness came of it in the end. Now, moving on to the second part of the poem, and the third stanza, which begins, a school is where they grind the grain of thought and grind the children who must mind the thought. Here the child's process of learning is reduced to the to a mill, a kind of mill where thoughts are ground down to their basic elements, and the child is then asked to mine those elements through their mind and make sense of them. And at the end of this process is when the worlds will open up, i.e. we learn the ABC, the sounds of letters, the formation of the letters into words and the meanings of those words when we put them into sentences and beyond, to a point where we can use our creativity and imagination to create stories and plays and poems and pictures and all kinds of different art. The same with mathematics and those laws which arise from those simple sums and equations that we learn very early on, to the laws of which determine science and the universe. In turn, it's the continuing process of learning and moving on which builds our perception of life, which is what is meant when he mentions the alphabet comes from Shakespeare and the integers come from Eulula's law, and as a whole, as from the whole inseparably, our lives come from that. The next stanza in the second part of the poem, the shrunken lives that have not been set free by law or poetic fantasy, may they be, my child has disappeared behind the schoolroom door, and should I live to see his coming forth, a life away, I know my hope, but I do not know its form. Shrunken lives, what does he mean here? not yet fully realized and freed by the law? Can we be freed by a law or poetic fantasy? I suppose in a way we can be, but we mustn't let those laws or fantasy get to a point that it's so set in stone, so bureaucratic even, and so unmovable that our own lives are stifled by it. The father laments that his son has passed through the door of education, and he wonders that when he sees him again a long time away, which may even be a lifetime away, because remember that we are constantly learning, we're all on a path of learning, we learn new things every day, and he wonders what kind of person he will eventually become and what he'll be capable of. He knows that he knows what he hopes for him is the best, but he doesn't know in what kind of way that will manifest, what shape it will take, what kind of person he'll become. And we can't always predict how our children are going to turn out when they start off young, and when they start learning. We can't predict where they're going to go, what kind of person they're going to be. That's just something that they're on their own journey too, and we can only guide them along that journey. The next stanza, which is the last one in the poem, nor hope to know it, may the fathers he finds among the teachers have a care for him more than his father could. And this final stanza is perhaps the most moving part of the poem, because the parent is basically saying that his son will find new fathers in the teachers that will teach him. And he even hopes that in these new fathers, who will probably spend more time with his son than he will now, that they will be better for him. He wants for the very best for him, even if this means that, you know, it's something that he could not provide for his son. He wants the very best for his son, like every caring parent. And even in this, he doesn't hope to know how this will take a form. He just places some kind of blind faith in the education system. The final two lines of the poem: even our tears belong to ritual. And I think this alludes to the fact that this is a tradition. This is an act of faith, kind of an act of faith, of placing a child in the hands of those that might teach him or her things that will bring him or her a greater understanding of the world and prosperity. Even the act which is passed down from generation to generation belongs to a kind of ritual. It's a kind of performance that we all go through, that we all expected to do, which nearly all children go through and parents go through. And in that ritual, even the tears, even the crying, I think is alluded to here, which are normally, you know, when we think of crying is normally a spontaneous thing. It's an uncontrollable thing that comes from our own emotions. You know, it's one of those things that can't be controlled. But here he's saying in the poem that even those tears belong to ritual, because we're going through a ritual. We're going through that ritual, and we know what's going to come. We know that when we take the child there, we're going to feel sad, we're going to feel bad. But it's in that hoping for the future and that greater kindness will come of it in the end, alluding again to that earlier part of the poem where, you know, Joseph's journey in the end, there was that greater kindness showed to his brothers. And that's what the poet here is alluding to in the end, meaning something good will come out of it, and that the child will be rounded, versed in several subjects, and able to express themselves on many different levels to their peers. Now, taking in all this poem, which is brilliant and I love it, it's great, it explains beautifully the whole what a parent goes through and what a child also goes through as well. But of course, the type of education system we use and whether it is fit for purpose is another matter. You know, education systems need to change with time. And there are many flaws in what we have, and it doesn't really suit every single child, the one that we have at the moment. Some children, you know, maybe including me here in this, that really didn't get the best out of school because school wasn't really suited to me. What happens with society, which is a bit sad really, is that, you know, there's a one-size-fits-all mentality. So we tend to, like, or our governments or our leaders tend to find the simplest solution is just to have one thing that will fix everybody. It'll be okay. It'll all be okay. But it isn't always okay. And there are always people outside of that system or outside of their own thinking, which really don't fit into that system because they have different needs. And I think there has to be a choice here. There has to be a choice that the education fits the child's needs. And there are many basic skills the education system does not cover, things that a child really should know. The life skills, building, cooking, survival, appreciation of nature and the spiritual world as well, as opposed to religion, which gets taught, but there isn't a spiritual appreciation which could benefit the child. And all these things a child has to later, in the current system, chase later on. They're kind of playing catch up later on because they leave the education system and then they can't, or when they're in the education system, they might be thinking of these things and then they go and discover them on their own. But these things could be included in a well-rounded education system. Just my thought. But this poem does convey that no matter what system we use, there will always be a point when we as parents have to place them in the hands of other people who can find better ways to teach than us. Now, some parents do choose to do homeschooling, and that's a good thing. But I think that in certain circumstances, it has to be the fact that, you know, we give our children to kind people who are experts in other subjects and who can explain those subjects in a far better way than we can. And the children have to step through that door into a greater reality of life, whether it be slowly or shockingly or whatever. We're all slowly weaned off the games and the things of play of childhood and ask the question, what do we want from the world and what does the world expect from us? So that's the poem that I've studied this week, and you may find something different from it. Have a read of it yourself and see what you think. I got it out of The Nation's Favourite Poems of Childhood, which I picked up recently at a very nice bookshop, second-hand bookshop in Dudley. But go and have a look for yourself and see what you think of it. And I'll be back with another poem soon.